Welcome to the Australian Community. The Australian Community is a 501c3 public charity, and our mission is to connect Australians living in the US through social, professional, and charitable initiatives. Today we're speaking with Renuka Summers, who is a senior tax advisor, and Peter Harper, who is the managing director of Ascena Advisors. Renuka, Peter, welcome.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James. It's great to be here.
Well, the theme of today's podcast is two things that are guaranteed in life, death and taxes. In the United States, they're very much interlinked. Peter, if you can just explain a little bit about Ascena Advisors. I know we've spoken in the past, but for those who may not have listened to one of our previous podcasts, perhaps you can just do a brief introduction.
Ascena Advisors, part of the Ascena Group, we own a number of CPA firms and a consulting business that is focused on specifically servicing the needs of global private clients that are moving in and out of the US. We have tried very hard to create an environment where we can service clients that are all at all different levels. So, you know, we've talked about this with you in the past. We recently established a business called Polo Tax, which is designed for the everyman because, you know, we're consistently getting the feedback that we would hope that our firm could deliver tax preparation to people at a fair price. So we've done that. We're servicing global private clients primarily from Australia or Asia that are doing business in the US.
Renuka, as a senior tax advisor, can you talk a little bit about your role within Ascena Advisors?
So James, my background is in corporate tax as well as private clients. I've been working with large international accounting firms and large law firms in Australia, and I moved to the US a couple of years ago. So it's been great working with Peter in this space because we cover, with the title work we do corporate M&A, cross-border work, as well as high net worth individuals and all the issues they face when they've got businesses or they're structuring their personal lives and their assets and moving or relocating to the US or moving back to Australia. There's a lot of planning and consideration that needs to be given to this space to make sure that you're not inadvertently caught out because you haven't filled in the right forms or paid the right amount of tax. And that's where we come in and where we service our clients and help people in this space.
Let's talk specifically about the topic today. Let's talk about estate tax.
If you're, for example, a non-resident alien and your assets in the US exceed $60,000, unless you have a treaty provision applying, you could be subject to estate taxes here.
That was a really good point. If a non-domiciliary, if someone who's not domiciled in America, so someone who's on an E3 visa is classified as a non-domiciliary, which they would under US law, they would just be at $60,000. However, if they are covered by the treaty, the estate tax treaty, they get the benefit of the marital threshold, right?
So for an Australian who has assets in the US, because Australia and the USA have an estate tax treaty, they're given the benefit of the treaty so that they are essentially treated like US persons. So the threshold is whatever is applicable to a US person, they would get the benefit of the higher exemption amount rather than being subject to tax at the $60,000 level.
In terms of New York State, is there not a New York State estate tax as well?
James, a number of states do have taxes, estate taxes, and New York is one of them. So New York has a threshold of $5.85 million for this year. So if you have assets in New York of over that amount, you will be taxed under the New York estate taxes regime as well.
Let's talk a little bit about tax strategies, estate tax strategies. Renuka, your experience in terms of clients that come to you that are concerned about their estate and estate tax, what are the typical strategies, advice that you would look at? And obviously everyone has different situations, but in general terms, for example, I know that trusts are often leveraged in this area. Can you speak a little bit about that?
So when clients first come to us, what we ask them is, what is your current estate plan? Do you have an estate plan? And what we would do is we would look at their current, often just their Australian, often it's just that they have the Australian wills that are done and Australian powers of attorney that they might have done before they left the country or which they did a few years ago. And so one of the One of the common strategies that Australians use with their wills is to have testamentary trust wills, so that if they die and they have children, everything goes into a testamentary trust for the benefit of a surviving spouse and their children, or a number of such testamentary trusts. However, that's a very good strategy for Australia, but then you've got to think about how that would work if the surviving spouse and the children were US, you know, residents in the US or citizens of the US. And that's not often, and you've got to make sure that it's compatible, because the Australian Tax Office has got in a number of tax determinations in the last few months, whereby foreign resident beneficiaries of Australian trusts are taxed at much higher levels and are now caught within the ambit of the ATO's taxing rights, so to speak, even though they're not residents of Australia, and even if the income that they're being taxed on is actually not Australian-sourced income. So it can create a lot of a very unfavourable outcome for a foreign resident beneficiary. Also, if the beneficiaries are primary beneficiaries of an Australian trust, they'll maybe falling under the US's grantor trust rules, and that can also have an unfavourable outcome from the US side of things, because they're automatically taxed on any income that the trust makes, and even if it's not distributed to them, because they're considered to own or control the trust. They've got to be very careful then to make sure that whatever plan is in place works in both countries. One of the key things that we've been focusing on is helping our clients get through that.
Trusts are no longer the primary planning tool that we're sort of recommending and seeing for our clients. I mean, the tax outcomes can be horrific. A lot of people really, when they think about, you know, Aussies, when they think about trusts, they think about them in the context of, you know, business structures or whatever else. They're not really necessarily thinking about them in the context of their estate plan and how would trusts under an estate plan be impacted under the US tax rules. Australian government seems very anti-trust and anti, you know, expat right now. So it's a really good and sensible time to be revisiting it. And then the one other thing I'll just say is that sort of main sort of planning tool then for us really just gets driven around life insurance. So one, it's ascertaining what estate tax exposure we think any of our clients will have from the start. When you know, Ranuka's working through, you know, what's a viable estate plan for them. And then two, and the one caveat I should put on that is, yeah, it's a bit like trying to pin the tail on the donkey, knowing where you think the estate tax threshold's going to be. So you need to stress test estate tax against a range of different alternatives. And then you need to have insurance, whether it's Australian-based insurance, American-based insurance, but you need to make sure your insurance is sufficient to address any estate tax risk if you have any.
Can you speak a little bit about the strategies that you use with insurance?
So term life is less common in Australia today. So what we're referring to is insurance that doesn't have a face value and insurance that does. And what I mean by a face value is that when insurance has a face value, you can actually call in an insurance policy. There's actually cash that you'll get back, right? In America, there's great products that exist for both of those. So it's almost like it's an investment product that's great because you can grow value inside a policy without paying tax, but it can be expensive. So it really depends on, you know, what your financial position is. But as James says, there are some fantastic products out there at the moment that the term insurance is relatively cost effective. Well, it is. It's very cost effective. The one big caveat I'll put on that, you know, always read the fine print on any policy. One common issue that we see that we come across very regularly is that when we are talking to folks for the first time about, do you have enough life insurance? They're like, oh, yeah, sure. I've got plenty of life insurance. It's in my super fund in Australia. A lot of Australian superannuation policies that are sitting in Australian superannuation funds don't allow payments to be made to non-residents. So folks are contributing to policies that have zero value. I think the biggest thing about insurance, firstly, looking at the coverage, going, what makes economic sense? What can I afford? I mean, you need to have, everyone should have life in some form of life insurance. But then it's really digging into the fine print. And I think the place where you know, groups like us can add significant value above and beyond the estate plan is working with folks to understand and make sure that, one, they got the right coverage, and two, that the fine print of the policy actually will provide coverage in all the circumstances you need the coverage to be effective.
Switching gears a little bit, it's no secret the Australian community is a 501c3, and under our IRS letter, we have a number of sections of the tax code where behests, devices, etc. are tax deductible to our organisation. Renuka or Peter, can you speak a little bit to how an Australian may leverage a US charity in their overall estate plan?
So James, if the charity has been registered as the equivalent of what's called a deductible gift recipient in Australia, so if it's a registered charity in the US that can accept donations for which you get a tax deduction, then deductible against the income of the estate for that year, but also it goes towards reducing the value of the actual estate. If you're getting close to that threshold and instead of paying the tax, you may be able to leverage that to reduce what is actually subject to or exposed to the tax, estate taxes on both the state and federal level. So that's where those sorts of donations can come into effect and be of benefit to somebody, especially if you're looking to add value to the community and help the Australian community even more. So that's something to consider.
I think that's a really good point that Renuka just made. I think probably the single biggest area when you actually get into people that have estate tax exposure, if you look at the current thresholds, anyone's going to classify you as a wealthy individual to have any estate tax exposure on the current rules. You know, in our experience, you know, anyone of that wealth level is thinking about how do they give back to the community, leave legacy, and, you know, if they can do that, while reducing any estate tax exposure, you know, they're not having to fork over a really good chunk of their estate to go to the federal or state government, then a really sound strategy is making a determination to make donations to a charity to reduce your taxable estate.
And keep in mind that in just a few years, you're going to have a lower estate tax threshold too. You're going to go back to the pre-2018 levels of approximately $5 million indexed for inflation, so about $5.5 million. If your estate is above that, you're exposed.
Yes, that's a great point. Let's take it back a little bit to something that applies to everyone, and that is having an up-to-date will in place. Obviously, that's the first rung of the ladder, so to speak, of an estate plan. But are there any issues that might face someone who has an Australian will versus a US will? Can you just speak to that?
So James, what we recommend to our clients is first, after considering what kind of assets they hold and where, we look at having wills in both jurisdictions that separately cover the assets in each jurisdiction. But you've got to be really careful there, because what can happen is the second will can override the first will if you're not careful about how it's drafted. So that's something that people often trip up on and think, oh, I'll have wills in each place and that'll cover me, but it doesn't necessarily do that if the second will overrides the first. So that's something that you've got to be very careful about when drafting wills into jurisdictions. Secondly, you can have what's called an international will. You can have a single will that complies with certain formalities and covers your worldwide assets. There are pros and cons with that approach too. So it really depends what the client's needs are. And so we sit down with them and go through exactly what they need and then make a determination as to what works best for their circumstances. There are various considerations to take into account. For example, probate. Having one will can delay probate if you're applying for probate in two different jurisdictions. For example, if you've got young children, then different considerations come into play too, because you want guardianship to be able to be effected very quickly. And something else, James, that people very often overlook is that even before death, what happens if you're incapacitated? And they overlook the fundamental importance of having powers of attorney in each jurisdiction, because if you are unable to act, then what happens to your assets in each place? How can people access your bank accounts, for example? And how can you pay your bills? Because otherwise, if your assets are essentially frozen, if you can't act, whoever's your family must be able to act on your behalf and be able to keep things moving for you. We've had this issue with a client who was an American citizen living in Australia who has assets in the US, who at the moment is incapacitated. His family is having a really difficult time now being able to access his assets in the US. They can't sell it. They can't do any deal with it because of the he doesn't have American powers of attorney. So then you've got to get American lawyers involved to ascertain whether whatever's been prepared in Australia is fit for American purposes. So that can really delay processes, and you know, you can lose money because if you can't act to liquidate or sell something, then your asset base is eroded.
Everyone should have a will, at least one will. I can't say that enough. It's important to have a will that deals with your assets, guardianship. It's like everything in life when you consider the law. There's a law and then there's the practical, right? So yeah, what happens when someone dies? It goes through this process called probated, where the will gets probated through a court. It has to go through a court. The court give it a stamp, which say, okay, this person's deceased and now we can transfer assets or we can give authority, grant authority to someone else to deal with the child. The circumstance that I think is often overlooked is if you think about, you know, for those Australians that have American citizen children, right, and an Australian will, something happens to you, you die, your kids are in America and the will's Australian, so it's got to get probated in an Australian court before a court in New York will accept it. What happens to your child in the intervening period? You're gone and they're in the country. Do you think if a family member rocks up to New York that the court's going to give them access to your child? Technically speaking, that child is a ward of the state in that scenario. So I cannot stress this enough. You need to be working with a team of estate planning professionals that understand at a high level, at the very least, the laws in both countries and understand how to bring together the core parts of the legal agreements as well as the practical parts of, you know, making sure that you're dealing with issues that, like Ranuka flagged and I just stepped through.
I think we should talk about, if you die without having a will, your assets fall under what's called intestacy rules, and you've got to then resort to the laws of that jurisdiction in order to have your estate distributed. Another thing people don't think about in the US is that in Australia, de facto marriages are recognized, and a de facto spouse is recognized as having equal rights as a legally married spouse. But in the US, certain states do not recognize so-called common law or de facto marriages. So that means that in an intestacy, that de facto spouse will not inherit automatically, and it would go to your next of kin, even if that's contrary to your intention. So that's something that is very specific that really needs to be covered up on when you're living in the US.
Yeah, that's a really great point. When you think about intestacy, as Ranuka said, you need to apply the rules of the jurisdiction where you die, right? So someone's living in America, they're Australian, they don't have a will, and they die. As Ranuka just said before, if they're in a long-term de facto relationship, the de facto is not going to inherit under the US intestacy rules because you've got to apply those rules first, prima facie. And the way the intestacy rules work in the US, it's just you're going to be a direct descendant, right? So you could have a sibling who you have no love for, inheriting your assets because you don't have a will. Again, the biggest thing, James is very kind. He invites us on and we talk about, you know, when I'm on here, I'm talking about normally income tax and international tax. And I often talk about the fact that you have these two systems that overlay one each other, and they've both got different policies when it comes to income tax. The same applies to estates. There's two very different policy positions that concern how to administer estate, concern intestacy, concern estate tax. So the complexity is that you're really overlaying two different systems. If you're not getting advice from someone who can pull the two systems together, you're going to have a leak in your boat. If you have a leaky boat, normally you sink to the bottom of the lake. It's best to patch it up and get a proper estate plan.
To wrap up today's discussion, I think if you're an Australian who has moved to the US or you're thinking of doing that, then there are three main considerations you really need to take into account. One, if you have insurance in your superannuation fund, especially life insurance, check with the super fund and the underwriter that they will cover you if you're a non-resident of Australia. Otherwise, you're just paying insurance premiums for nothing. Secondly, you need a will. If you're going to have assets in Australia or the US, you're going to need one or more wills, and that's absolutely imperative. Same, you need powers of attorney in each jurisdiction if you have assets in each of those jurisdictions. somebody must be able to act if you're not able to do that. Otherwise, you fall under, in the absence of a will, you will fall under the rules of intestacy and your assets may be distributed to next of kin rather than to a de facto spouse or a friend that you may prefer to have your assets distributed to. So those three considerations are very important, James, and we come across that every day with some of our clients, and those issues really need to be addressed.
Ranuka Peter, thank you again for your great insight into this often overlooked subject. I know it's not a subject that people necessarily want to discuss, but it's obviously something that needs to be considered for the reasons you've just outlined. I want to thank you so much for your time this afternoon, and we'd love to have you back some other time to discuss another subject.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James. Really appreciate it.
To learn more about the Australian community, you can find us on the web, aucommunity.org. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at aucommunity. Or you can like our Facebook page, The Australian Community, or by searching at AU Community.